This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the incapable, the the unbelievable. So here we are today, one more day.
Yeah, one more day.
One more day.
Wow, we survived another week.
We did it. So this week was
Independence Day,
4th of July, fireworks. What did you do, Johnny? Did you do some fireworks?
No, I did. I worked. I have come to the conclusion that the human race is doomed.
Well, that's probably true, but
yeah,
you know, I think we have maybe another 100 years or so before we're totally extinct.
We're doomed, especially after just what I saw people doing, just
strange things.
Well, yeah, just stupid things, you know. I feel this way because it doesn't seem like anybody's concerned about the human race. Now, we can say we are, you and I. Oh, yeah, but it just seems like nobody... They're just too busy. They're too busy in buffet lines and at Walmart and just...
Yeah, they're not taking care of one another.
Yeah, anyway.
When you get connected to the energy of the universe, the biggest message is to care for one another, to love one another. Mm-hmm. Care for one another and kind of be there and help each other out. This is what, I hate to use the word God, because it's so overused and misunderstood, but this is what that energy, that God, that essentially the ultimate being wants from us. It wants us to learn that, because that's how spirits grow. That's how our spirit or our soul grows and goes, you know, to the next level and moves on. Is by learning to be more caring for one another and more caring for our planet.
Mm-hmm.
We're the stewards of our planet, and yet we're not doing a very good job.
But we're being the stupid of our planet.
Yeah, we're being the stupid instead of the stewards.
You know, I really like what this guy says in this movie, and I know you will know the movie.
I'd like to share a revelation that I've had during my time here. It came to me when I tried to classify your species. I realized that you're not actually mammals. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with the surrounding environment, but you humans do not. You move to an area and you multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed. The only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague.
Are we?
The Matrix.
Yeah. I don't know. It makes a lot of sense.
It makes sense. It's been portrayed in many, many movies. A lot of times, though, they talk about aliens coming here and doing that and colonizing our planet and
mm-hmm.
using it up and then moving to the next one. But that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly what we're doing. We are a virus
mm-hmm.
on this planet. We just eat it up. We eat up all the resources. And the problem is there's no place to move on to.
Yeah, that's scary.
It is. It is.
What I don't understand is why we're wanting to colonize the moon and colonize Mars when there's nothing there. At least the natural resources that we always want to suck the life out of.
Yeah, there are no natural resources there to exploit.
Yeah.
You know, anything that... Any colony we set up on the moon or Mars or Venus or Saturn or Jupiter or wherever, because there's no resources there, we're going to have to take it with us. And where do we get it?
Yeah.
Right here. We've got to rape the planet some more to take the stuff to Mars.
So, oh, I hate to open the show on such a Debbie Downer, Bill.
Yeah,
sorry.
I know.
Did you do anything for the 4th of July?
My wife and I went to Olympia, got the dog groomed, did some shopping.
Thanks for shopping the harbor first. So, appreciate that.
We always shop the harbor, but sometimes there are stores in Olympia that they don't have here.
Like dog groomers
and World Market and Bed Bath and Beyond and Trader Joe's, you know, and we like to go to restaurants there and get something. Except everything was closed yesterday.
All the
restaurants we like to go to were closed.
Do you know if Costco was open?
So, I don't know. We didn't go to Costco.
Yeah,
I haven't had a Costco membership in 10 years.
You can go with us.
I get carried away in there. So
it's easy to do.
It is.
So much great stuff.
We did find a place to eat that was called the Raw Food. I think it's called Live Love Raw, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a raw food restaurant.
So they don't cook anything?
Well, technically, no. It's all made from 100% raw food.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no processed or cooked food in it. It's all raw. And I had curry sauerkraut.
Mm.
And it was actually very, very good.
It doesn't sound all that great, but...
I know, but it was real tasty.
Yeah?
And then for dessert, we had avocado key lime pie.
Wow.
It's made with avocados. And it tasted just like key lime pie, except that it was made with avocados.
How was the prices?
You know, I don't know, because I didn't...
Because you dined and dashed?
Yeah, we dined and dashed. I didn't go in. I sent Shannon in to get the food, so...
You didn't want to be mobbed by fans?
Well, there was no place to park at the mall. I mean, it was pretty crowded, and I don't walk very well anymore, so...
Yeah.
I couldn't park in the boondocks and walk all the way in.
Yeah.
I depend on those handicap places, and...
People steal them.
They do. They take them away. And
or they use their dad's placard and park there. So
that's right.
I despise people like that.
No, but you know, there's cheaters everywhere, and we don't. I try to ignore them.
Yeah. Is that why you're ignoring me today?
Exactly. I think the majority of people are honest and have integrity. It's just that there are some that don't. And those go into politics.
So what do you want to talk about today? Did you experience anything? You have any NDEs? Did you see any Sasquatch? Did you...
Well, you know, we keep seeing lights in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's UFOs or what it is, but, you know, I talked a couple of weeks ago about the three red lights we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And then this last week, there was this bright light in the sky, and it was there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, it must be a star. So I thought, well, tomorrow night I'll go look in the same place and see if it's there. And the next night, it wasn't there.
Hmm.
And it wasn't an airplane because it didn't move enough, and the lights were pretty steady. But it's very strange, and this has been happening in ocean shores or around ocean shores for the last several weeks that we've noticed. And I'm just wondering if maybe there's some observation going on there.
For the 4th of July, during the fireworks, I filmed a UFO.
Really?
Now, I know it's like fireworks going off, but this thing was steady, and it was moving. I'll post it on the website, strangeharbor.net, let you decide. Just hit play there, and you'll see it behind all the fireworks. Now, it could be one of those Chinese lanterns. It could be a kite that's been set on fire. But to me, it's a UFO. I'm unable to identify that flying object.
Yeah, I see it. Very interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just one of those, that's interesting, you know.
Yeah, huh.
Yeah.
That's very strange.
So, We've talked about Mary and how she experiences a lot of these just weird things.
Yeah.
Like the whatever, the critter that ran across the road and just stuff happens to her. They come out of the woodwork.
She attracts strange.
Right? Something, yeah, yeah. But she's probably the purest soul I've ever encountered.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She was telling me she was at work and all of a sudden the hair stands up on her arms and she even got the attention of a coworker, said, look. And then her body just got cold. The way she described it, she felt like a spirit just walked through her.
Wow.
It was just ice cold. And so I was asking her questions, trying to get more information. How do you know it was a spirit? What would make you feel like that was a spirit? She's like, I don't know. It just felt like that.
It's intuition. I think we should pay attention to that stuff, what it feels like, having had several near-death experiences and being sensitive to those kind of encounters of the spirit. I can understand that. I can understand that sense of knowing that something is happening or that you're experiencing something, but not being able to explain it or tangibly prove it.
So speaking of near-death experiences, you know, I don't think we cover near-death enough. And you being an experiencer multiple times, I think we should discuss near-death experiences more.
We should, because I think that near-death experiences are really important because they teach us things about, not only about what life is like after we die, what's expected of us here and now. Why are we here? You know, what are we doing here? Are we just here to rape the planet and take all the resources and move to the next one? Or is there a purpose? I believe there's a purpose. And having had these experiences and kind of been in touch with that energy of the universe, I really think that we have a purpose, and that purpose is to learn and to love and to care about one another. There was an old saying, living, laughing, loving, and learning are the four L's of life. It's important to enjoy life. It's important to experience life. You know, I talk sometimes about getting a good education. That education isn't necessarily something that you can get by going to school. It comes from experiencing life, experiencing things to the fullest, to being present in the moment. And that's, I think we're losing that because of cell phones and everything else. I saw this woman yesterday. She stepped right out into traffic while she was looking at her cell phone. I mean, she didn't even pay attention. She stepped out in the street, you know, and there were cars coming. She could have easily gotten hit. Mm-hmm. She didn't, thank God. But the point here is that we have to be present in the situation. We have to be aware of our surroundings. We have to be not only aware of everything that's going on around us, but sensually aware. What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it feel like? What are our impressions of everything that's around us? You know, and we don't have to stand there and analyze everything. Mm-hmm. But by being aware, having awareness, it allows us to see things in a different way. It allows us to see not only what's happening around us, but it also allows us to see what's about to happen around us. That's very important.
So this teenager from Texas.
From Texas.
Football player.
Yeah.
Real dopey looking kid. Collapses and dies.
Oh, that's not happy.
He is revived, but he has quite the compelling, interesting story of his near-death experience.
Zach Clements is a strong teenager. He's a high school football player at Victory Life Academy in Brownwood, Texas, and obviously he's got a sense of humor. By all measures, he's a healthy young man, which is why it's still a shock.
I was running and I had collapsed.
That he dropped to the ground during PE class last week.
Not sure why.
It was a sudden cardiac arrest, according to his doctors. His mother was immediately called and even beat the ambulance to the emergency room.
When they opened the ambulance door, he was blue, and they were on top of him doing chest compressions.
Technically and medically, he was dead.
And they said that I was I was without a heartbeat for 20 minutes.
And just as hospital staff were ready to make it official, they got a pulse. He was airlifted to Cook Children's Hospital in Fort Worth and woke up days later. His recovery has been incredible, but even more mind-blowing is the story he tells of what he saw during the time many believed he had died.
I saw a man that had longish kind of ruffled hair with a kind of thick beard, and it didn't take me long to realize that that was Jesus.
He's describing what his family is convinced was a near-death miracle.
I went up to him and he put his hand on my shoulder and told me that everything would be all right and not to worry. I was just calm and just at peace.
The cynics out there will say, you've seen too many movies.
And for him to wake up and tell us something that he experienced like that, it's just, I mean, you can't explain it. It's not humanly possible to explain it.
Billy Clements is the teen's father. He says accepting his son's experience as a miracle is the only thing that makes sense.
And that's what we're standing on. That was a rhema word from God that we got. And we're going to hold on to that.
Do you think this is something that might strengthen your faith?
It is. I heard angels singing in the background.
It may be a medical mystery for the doctors, but for this family, there's no question it was divine intervention.
I'm just glad he decided to let me have my baby back.
In Fort Worth, Ken Molestina, CBS 11 News.
I was surprised that CBS News would run this.
Well, you know, 25 years ago or 30 years ago, you would never hear this in the mainstream news.
Mm-hmm.
But today, it's, we're more accepting, and the mainstream picks it up more readily.
So what do you think of his experience in meeting Jesus?
Yeah, I think it's valid.
Was he high on, morphine from, or, you know, being in the hospital or what?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that part of this, you know, the part of the meeting Jesus and hearing the angels sing and all that, that has to do with our cultural learning here. Sometimes these spirits manifest themselves in a way that's most acceptable to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, otherwise you reject it, you become afraid, and it becomes a negative experience rather than positive.
Hmm.
Jesus was a real human being, and he had a soul, a spirit.
How do you know that?
Because I know.
Just
because I know. It's one of those things that I cannot prove tangibly, but it's one of those things that I just know.
Okay.
So Jesus was a human being, and he had a soul, and it was a very special soul. He wanted to tell people about God, about the energy of the universe, why it's important to behave a certain way and to do things a certain way so that we can learn and grow, so that we finish this short period of time we have on Earth and move to the next level and grow as a spirit. It's like when you have a baby, you feed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you feed it, you know, mothers feed it with breast milk and then maybe formula, and then eventually it eats solid food and it grows. But if you were to just keep it locked up and not allow it to learn anything, the baby would essentially remain a baby forever. It wouldn't grow, it wouldn't experience, it wouldn't have any knowledge or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So as a spirit, we have the same thing. We need to be fed. We need, and the food of the spirit is knowledge. And that the more we learn, and I don't mean learning in school as much as learning by experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if some of those experiences are bad experiences, if you learn from them, then you've taken a step in the right direction. You know, the idea is to not do bad things in the first place, but if we learn from them, then it's not that it's okay to do those things, but we've shown some advanced movement. So every time that a person has a near-death experience, it's a communication from the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that some people see Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people see Muhammad. Some people see Buddha. But I think that most of the time, people see someone else. They see a relative or a friend or someone they admire. In my very first near-death experience, it was my grandfather that came to greet me.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd been dead about 5 years at that time, or maybe a little longer.
Now, why do you think him and not your grandma?
Interesting. Why him? And why my father's father rather than my mother's father?
Yeah.
Or my grandmother, except that I never knew my grandmother on my father's side. She died when he was a young boy.
Mm.
I wouldn't have known her. I wouldn't have recognized her. And we get presented usually with a spirit that we will recognize, that will be somewhat familiar to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't really know my grandfather very well because we lived a couple thousand miles away, and I think I only saw him a couple times in my life. But he made an impact on me. I have to tell you that. The first time I met my grandfather, I was about 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of taught me about things. You know, he lived in Wisconsin. There's a lot of dairy farms there. He told me about milking the cows and working in the farm and such. As I got a little older, when I was about, I think I was about 12 or 13, we went there for a family reunion, and my grandfather took me aside because I was his namesake and destined to be the leader of the family, I suppose, although I never did become that. I don't particularly like being a leader of anything.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he took me aside, and he said, "I'm going to make you a man." So he gave me a wad of chewing tobacco and told me to stick that in my cheek. And he handed me a bottle of whiskey, and he said, "Take a big drink of this." And then we spit out the tobacco, and we lit up cigars. I was pretty green in the face by this time. But this was his way of making me a man, making me experience things that I probably wouldn't otherwise experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that taught me that understanding how things happen, what things taste like, they feel like, what different substances make you change, that smoking and drinking changes you. It changes your ability to think clearly and
mm-hmm.
function clearly. But it also told me that maybe there's something to this process of learning by experience, because I didn't grow up to be an alcoholic, although my father is, or was, he's dead now. And I grew up, I did smoke cigarettes for a while, but after a while I realized that it wasn't a good thing to do, and I quit. And I think that some of that experience from my grandfather helped me to understand that it wasn't a good thing.
Well, a Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and coming up, more on the near-death experience.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
My name is Richard Cole, and I am 72 years old. I have never been real, what I would call, religious. I've always believed that there was a God, and I believed that there was Jesus. But I've had doubts. I've been a doubter before. I'm no longer that. And this happened to me in 2005, so that was 6 years ago. They told me when I went in that I'd have about a 50-50 chance of making it. I found out later with that kind of operation where they take your heart out, you have a 10% chance of survivability. So the anesthesiologist put the IV in. I went off to sleep right away, and they start rolling me down the hall to the operating room, and then I realized that I was still conscious and I wasn't under yet. It was like I was for a little bit, but then I was awake again. And I saw them roll me into the operating room, and so I wanted to tell the doctors that, hey, you got to give me some more of whatever it was you gave me because I'm not out yet. But I couldn't speak. I didn't have any pain or anything like that. I just could not open my mouth and get the words out, even though I tried very hard to tell them that I was still conscious. So I'm laying on the table. There are three doctors standing over me and two nurses. And they all have their gowns on, their mask on and everything. They're ready to go. And I heard the doctor ask the nurse for the scalpel, and she got it. And she started to open me up from right here down to here. He did. Opened me up like that. And then they got in an electric saw out and started cutting my breastbone open. And then I saw them go down and start to take my heart out, and then everything went black. But I was still conscious, but I couldn't see anything. And it was like a heavy black fog, and I'm just standing there looking around. I couldn't figure out what to do next or what was going to happen next. Right then, two beams of light came over my right shoulder. So I started to turn around and look over my shoulder to see where it was coming from. And then I heard a voice. And the voice was very authoritative, not loud, but he says, "Don't turn around." And I'm thinking, well, why not? And he says, "Don't turn around, because if you see my face, you'll have to stay here." And he says, "Now, that'll be okay if you stay here, but I have a job for you. And if you disobey me, I won't be happy." And he says, "You don't want to see me unhappy." So I said, "Yeah, well, okay. I better pay attention and do what he says." And then I said, "You know, I know who you are." He said, "Oh, you do?" And I said, "Yeah." He was sitting in a white throne, just a plain chair. It didn't have jewels or anything on it, but just a plain white chair. And the next thing that happened is he said, "Well," he says, "do you have any more questions before you leave?" I said, I said, "You know, I got to think about this." And I thought and I thought. I was thinking really hard. What am I going to ask God? Couldn't think of anything. I wanted to be really smart enough to ask him something very pertinent. And so I said, "Well, I'm going to have to revert to an old cliche. What's the meaning of life?" And he starts laughing again. I said, what's so funny now? And he says, "Well, I don't know why, but a lot of people ask me that question, and it's really real simple. But I tell you what, when you come back, we'll sit down. You can ask me all the questions that you ever will have. I'll answer for you." So I said, "Okay." He says, "Okay, it's time for you to go back." And I turned around. "I'm sorry, but..." He put his arms around me. He put his arms around me. And it was a feeling that I can't explain. It was unconditional love, but it was words. I can't tell you the words. And I'm sorry, but I always act like this because I can feel it again. So, changed my life. And the next thing I heard was the nurse was saying, "I think he's ready to come out of it. His temperature's at 90 degrees.
So what do you think of that experience, Bill?
Well, that's kind of typical of near-death experiences, the unconditional love, experiencing light or experiencing seeing your body from essentially an outside perspective. When you have a near-death experience, they've studied this. I mean, there's There's a ton of research on these things. And there's actually, if you want to go learn more about this, you can go to the conference in September.
Ooh, there's a conference?
There's a big conference.
Where at?
International conference. It's being held at the Bellevue Hilton on September, I think it's 1st and 2nd. I'm not sure. It might be even a day earlier. If you want to come hear me speak, I'm going to be there on...
Ooh, you're going to be there?
I'm going to be there on September 1st.
Okay.
I'll be speaking as a member of the veterans group and talking about near-death experiences and veterans. But this guy, a lot of what he talked about was very typical of the kind of things that happen in a near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to that place in that light, you have this overwhelming sensation of unconditional love, of being loved, you know, to the very core of your being. And then you also have a sense of peace and contentment and a sense of knowledge and knowing. And I don't mean academic knowing. I mm-hmm. mean universal knowing, understanding the why we're here and what our purpose is and all about the universe. This sense of unconditional love that he talked about, and he broke down when talking about it, it's very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people today grow up without a lot of love in their family. If you haven't had a lot of love in your family, having that experience of unconditional love is very, very powerful. It's very moving. But this is what the universe is all about. This is what life is all about. This is what we're here to learn. We're here to learn to love each other, to love everybody. And I know that sounds simplistic and it sounds idealistic, but it doesn't mean that you have to, you know, go around hugging everybody you see. But it means being accepting of people,
mm-hmm.
accepting of people's differences, accepting of people's different perspectives. We have to find in ourselves that place that allows us not only to be loved, but to give love. And I may have talked about this before. I think we misunderstand love. We can be loved, but we don't necessarily get love. We have to give love. Love is something that you give, not something that you get.
Mm-hmm.
When someone gives you love and you accept that love, it grows in you. When you give love to someone else and they accept that love, the love also grows within you. But if you give it to someone who doesn't accept it, then it doesn't grow as much. Not everyone is going to accept the love that you give, but that doesn't mean that you can't care about them. I mean, I know a lot of people that I'm, you know, I don't agree with, or that don't I don't want to spend time with, but that doesn't mean I can't love them for who they are, that I can't feel a sense of humanity towards them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wishing them well, hoping they have a good life, hoping that they don't suffer in life. The other thing is the besides love is the learning part. It's so important that we learn about human life and why we're here and what it takes to be a more idealistic society, a society that cares for one another and that cares for the planet, rather than a society that is at odds with one another and is destructive of the planet. We're here. We're here because, if you want to call it God, we're here because God put us here. If we're here because God put us here, we must be here for a reason. Now, my most recent near-death experience, I went out in the universe and I was in a coma in a hospital because I had done something stupid. not destructive stupid, but I went out without a coat on in the rain and spent the day doing some things without being appropriately dressed, and I got pneumonia and I had an infection and one thing kind of snowballed. But I ended up in a coma, and I was able to go out in the universe and I was able to see what lives in the universe. And the universe is teeming with life. I mean, there's life everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And all kinds of different forms and all levels. And I had the opportunity to meet and talk with the spirit that inhabited the body of Leonardo da Vinci.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been an admirer of da Vinci and his forward thinking and his ability to kind of see things long before they happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked with this person, and they basically told me that human beings are destructive, and mm-hmm. until they can learn to be more caring, they're probably going to destroy themselves. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that their spirits are destroyed, but it means that their spirits don't grow and don't learn and don't progress, which means that spirit is essentially doomed to keep doing it over and over again until they get it right. So it's important that we learn to love people, that we learn to learn, that we learn to laugh, that we learn to live our life in the here and now, that we learn to accept other people. It's important that we learn to accept ourselves. And I think that may be the hardest part, is accepting ourselves. We're all so critical of ourselves that it's hardest to accept yourself as who you are and what you are. But when you do that, when you do accept yourself 100%, life changes, radically changes. You're free to do all the things you want to do, to live life much more fully. It takes away the barriers. It allows us to live a more productive life, more happy life, a more loving life, to understand that no human being can take from you the feeling that you have for yourself. No human being can take from you your spirit. Only you can do that.
I have a hard time loving that person doing 10 miles an hour under the speed limit. I have a real issue with that.
So, if they're behaving badly, and then you behave badly, then what we have is two people behaving badly instead of one.
I just said I have a hard time loving them. I'd rather throw a brick at them, yes.
It's not about, you know, wanting to kiss them on the lips and, you know, crawl into bed with them.
Yeah.
Loving them is being accepting. So, yes, I know, I get frustrated with that guy in front of me that's going too slow. But it doesn't mean that I have animosity towards them. It doesn't mean that I hate them or dislike them. You know, I may dislike what they're doing, but I don't have to dislike the person. I only have to dislike the action. So, if they behave inappropriately, I can accept that. I'll try to understand why they would do that. And then just accept the person for who they are. And some people behave inappropriately, and that's who they are. You know, I hate to keep bringing up politicians, but they're our most obvious example of people that behave inappropriately sometimes. But everybody does. I mean, we all behave inappropriately.
Not me.
No, but you're perfect.
Oh, so, that was a funny one, huh?
It was.
Becky Hawkins is a hospice nurse, authored Transitions, A Nurse's Education About Life and Death. And she sat by the bedside of seriously ill and terminally ill patients for more than 30 years as an oncology and hospice nurse. During that time, she listened to patients describe various kinds of spiritual experiences, including near-death experiences. You can find her on, you know, YouTube and, you know, the normal places where she's sharing some of the stories from the people that she was bedside with. Much like Joanne Clarkson at the UFO Summit when she spoke, because she did the same thing. She was, you know, hospice nurse, and the experiences she shared were quite remarkable. And some of the near-death and some of the afterlife things that you just can't explain how these things happen. You know, everybody's trying to, like, scientifically explain things.
Right. We want tangible evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't exist. Yeah, and you can't do it. And it's... How do you...
And not only is there not tangible evidence, but there aren't adequate words to describe it. We don't have definitions of this kind of thing, so that it's very difficult to describe. You know, when we talk about the light and the love and the learning, it's very hard to fully understand the depth of that, because we don't have words that describe the depth of that.
The first thing I was aware of later on was looking up and seeing the surgeon and hearing him say, "Pity you were too late, chaps." And he took off his mask and went off. And I was a bit concerned, because I had all my faculties were still there. And then I became aware that I wasn't looking at the surgeon from the operating table, but I was way above looking down. And he was chatting, and they were closing the place up and putting lights out and all that sort of thing. And I had this incredible experience of moving up into a misty sort of area, and then becoming aware that I was in a tunnel. And it was totally peaceful. It was a place of absolute compassion, of understanding, of no coercion to do anything at all. And I became aware, actually, that I wasn't me. I was a long tube with rounded ends, and this tunnel started to form around the mist. And as soon as I was aware of that, the tube started to move up the tunnel. There was a big light at the end. And it came to rest just at the end of the tunnel. And I got out. I was no longer the tube. I was a sort of virtual baby in nappies, if you like. A symbol of total innocence, but completely without fear. And very curious about the light. And then this experience, it starts getting trite, because I didn't really have the language to describe it. But I got out and I went into this area of lighter area, which was sort of floored like alabaster marble, and vague colours and movements. And there were beings, not that I could see, but that I was aware of. And they were completely compassionate, loving, incredibly caring beings, and they said, "This is the entrance to," the wording is difficult here. The entrance to the level of life, if you like. These are our concepts, and these are some of our concepts. And if you feel that you if you can contribute to them, or even if you can understand them, you're welcome to come in. But they actually gave me all the experiences of all my lifetimes to make the decision whether to come in. And I looked at these concepts, and frankly, I didn't understand them. I thought, I just don't know enough. And I said to these, not said, but communicated to these amazing beings, "I think I ought to go back." And then I was aware, for the first time, of the huge humour that's in the universe. And there was a sort of chuckle of appreciation. And the voices in unison said, "We think you should." So I did. I got back into the tube and went hurtling down the tunnel, knowing that at the end of it, and the visual thing was shards of glass that I was going to have to go through and pain. And in the event, I just went through with no pain at all. And the next thing I knew was a voice shouting, "Mr. Miller, are you in there?" And I wanted to communicate all this to where I'd been and what had happened, what a wonderful thing it was. So, having come back into my body, I came back with a completely new set of values. All the values I'd had before, all the important things that I seemed to be doing before were just a nonsense. And I was just so glad to be alive and capable of appreciating what we have here. of sounds and people and colours and flowers and growing things. And it was a fundamentally life-changing experience. And the other big thing is I came back completely without fear of anything, because once you're not afraid of death, there's not much point in being afraid of anything else. And I decided that what I was doing was not very satisfying, so I came down to Cornwall and down here, because I knew there was something. I'd been pulled down here for years. Very shortly after I moved down here, there's a clairvoyant walked around the corner. I didn't know who he was. And he stopped and he looked at me and he said, are you involved in healing? And I said, no, I didn't know what healing was. And he said, well, you should be. And he talked about healing and the Nuttall Federation and the way people can be healed. And I thought, this is a real nutter. And he said, well, come up the hill, walk up the hill. And we walked up to the top of Trencrom Hill. And he said, you ought to be involved in healing people, but he said, you have to be involved with healing the earth. And I backed off a bit, and I thought, well, you know, who is this guy, and what is this about? And he said, the earth energy center of this hill is here, and that's why you've been drawn to the hill.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you would like to listen to back episodes or archives on strangeharbor.net, or if you would like to contact us, if you want to yell at Bill for his New Age hooey.
Or if you want to buy my book.
Or, yeah, how do we buy your book?
They can go on Amazon.com. It's not available in bookstores anymore. But
what?
Well, you know, bookstores only carry books for a certain period of time. And
politicians.
And then they drop them, yeah. So it's not in the bookstores anymore, but
boo.
It's certainly available online. The title is If Morning Never Comes.
Not When Morning Never Comes.
Not When Morning Never Comes, but If Morning Never Comes.
I'm going to write a book called When Morning Never Comes.
By Bill Vandenbush. I don't know what they're charging for it these days. My publisher sets all that, so
okay.
I have no idea. But you can go on Amazon and get it.
Well, that'll do it. Stay tuned. Same strange time, same strange place. I don't know.
Same strange harbor.
Hey, that was a good one.
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.